Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting at the controls in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. A special guest co-host today is Josh is swinging somewhere from a tree in Holmes County, trying to hang a deer stand, Mr. Grower. Patrick, what's up?
Not much, man. Just waiting for the split to end and trying to figure out what the weather's going to do this weekend.
Just sitting there thinking about Josh swinging from the tree. Josh is, for a little bit of extra Christmas money, Josh has taken a small little part-time job with a company there in Greenwood. I think this is a cool concept. They sell the deer stands, and if you buy your deer stands from them, they'll go put them up for you. That way you don't have to get some kind of special trailer or anything like that. So Josh is working on that extra Christmas money with the and the new one coming along real soon. So, hey, I got to tell you something funny happened this weekend. Hey, but before I do that, coming up in just a minute, Cummin Martin is back. And I guess we'll get into Chapter 8 of Becoming Martin. It's been a fun ride with Martin, especially talking about the old Duck Dynasty days, which they're not too old, but he'll be coming up in just a minute. So, Patrick, you've met a lot of people off of Duck South. I think you probably talked to half the group on the phone. I don't even know how you ever get off the phone every day.
I get in a little bit of trouble for that because I usually don't. I talk to a lot of guys.
I like call you. Hey, I got to go. Ben Hammerschmidt is calling. Excuse me. Who is Ben Hammerschmidt? Oh, man, you know him. He's on Duck South. I'm like, no. There's 23,000 people on Duck South. So, all right, so one of the members, which some of them, when you post up, they always communicate with you somewhat. If Brad Collier is one of them. I'm sure you know that name.
Yep.
Brad is originally from Mississippi, moved to Georgia, and his daughters are like super athletes. One of his daughters got invited to an elite prospect camp at Ole Miss this past weekend. This is a camp for 17 and 18-year-old girls. She's 12.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It's unbelievable how good she is. So, anyway, Brad said, listen, man, they got that camp going on. Man, I don't have anything going on but watching them a little bit here and there. Going to grab lunch. Sure, man. Be great. So we go to lunch, have a great time Saturday visiting, and Brad's a great guy, really great guy. We know a lot of the same people. He knew a few of the old MS Ducks, because I think he was on MS Ducks. All right. Stop boring you with the part of the story. Great time, great guy. He said, listen, you come back by somewhere close to me tomorrow, close to the softball field, bring me some Texas rig weights. If you don't mind, I'll buy a few dozen from you. Sure. Brad is an avid listener of this podcast. Listens to every one of them. Anyway, I pull up with the Texas rig weights. He's sitting in center field. He comes walking over to catch up with me. I give him the weights. Well, in the meantime, Wilson puts his window down. You would have thought that Brad was meeting Jimi Hendrix or something when Wilson put that window down. He said, "Hey, is that Big Me?" I'm like, "That's him. That's him, man." Old Brad put a grin on his face. Like I said, man, I thought he was going to ask Wilson for his autograph. He said, "Man, Big Meat, it is so good to meet you." And I just didn't realize throughout all these podcasts of talking about family, you don't realize it, doing one every day, about how much I talk about meat. That's my son, Wilson. But meat is brought up a lot because he's a good kid. But it's a lot of funny things that happens with Wilson. And I just thought Brad.
I tell you what, we hadn't hung out in a while. I was thinking about that today. But, I mean, always getting to see him, he's one of the happiest kids and politest kids I've ever met. He's a hoot to be around. All your kids are funny to be around. So, it's crazy. So what else is on tap this week, Rocky? I mean, I know that you caught some flack about not doing podcasts. You've been breeding goats.
I have. And I caught flack for saying that I bred goats. I didn't personally breed a goat. I personally watched it happen, but I didn't personally breed them.
You were just assisting in the process?
Yeah, I got a little short buck, so he needs some lifting up.
You guys don't show the bucks, do you?
No. Yeah, I mean, you really literally have to get him, get him lifted up a little bit. A little
sounds
squatty
like thing. Sounds like you need to get him a step stool.
That is pretty much exactly what it is. Hey, I got a question for you. Sitting here in my kitchen filling out address forms. I was thinking about this over the weekend. What is worse to you when it comes to condiments? Is it the mustard booger or the ketchup slop that comes out right when you, if you don't shake a bottle of ketchup up? What's worse to you?
I hate the red ooze that comes out before the ketchup. Because you can always take the mustard, that hard piece, you can always pick it out. But I mean,
I eat mustard boogers.
I mean, if you get the stuff that comes out before the ketchup on your bun, it's over.
Oh yeah,
it's all soggy at that point. You're done. So that's the one I hate. I tell you what. Speaking of that, I have in my shampoo bottle, the top fell off, and it's one of those that has a little hole. Well, the other day, like, it wasn't coming out. The shampoo wasn't coming out very good. So I, like, put it under the water and I cleared it out and I stuck it up. Well, the other morning, I mean, you know, I don't have a whole lot of hair. So to keep it real short, I don't use a lot of shampoo. I got the whole handful of shampoo after that booger cleared off there, off the top of it.
I'm just imagining what in the world you're washing on top of your head. It's not, you keep it pretty slick coat.
I don't keep it slick. I keep it short.
I did have it slick
at one point. I don't like the cold though. So
hey, I would love to see you with one of those new hairstyles that everybody's wearing today. See around Ole Miss. Guys still part their hair, but the whole mop parts now. It's like a wave is going one way, right? And they leave all this hair over the top of their ears. You can't see kids' ears anymore.
man, we used to have wings when we were in college.
Oh, man.
There
was nothing better than the Luke Perry. You talking about the sideburns that came down that were in style because of 90210?
No, I'm talking about the wings when, like, you put your hat on and your hair curled up, because my hair is naturally curly. When you put your hat on and it, like, flipped up under outside your hat over your ears.
I remember those. I thought you meant the Luke Perry sideburns. You remember when they came in style in about 98?
I couldn't see you with sideburns, Rocky. I never had them. My daddy always made us keep them, you know, a little earlobe right there. That was as far down, or the little notch in your ear. That was about as far down as they could go. So,
you're not going to catch much hair on my face anyway. I'm not old enough to grow a beard yet. Sideburns, whatever.
Somebody asked me the other day if I was shaving mine, and I was like, no. I'm starting to get some white in it, but that's okay. I just have resigned to the fact that I'll just have some white hairs in my beard. That's all right. I can live with it.
Speaking of beards, you got one of the best bearded fellas in the world coming up in just a second. Patrick, I've enjoyed it, brother.
Me too, bud.
I got the debate of the ketchup slop or the mustard booger. What's worse? Solved today.
Me too.
But look at that interview with Martin now. All right, guys, like I told you on the front end of the podcast, hey, can I just say Sick Martin is here with us this week?
Yeah, that'd be the most accurate term I've heard for it yet. I just, boy, something done got a hold of me here, and golly, I mean, I guess that's what you get after 16 straight days of pretty subpar duck hunting, you know, and then it ends and you're like, well, now I'm sick. Great. I'm sure that was all worth it, you know, to do what we did. So, golly, when you're killing them, you don't ever get sick. When it gets slow is when you get sick. I don't know if it's like adrenaline in your body keeping it out of you or what it is, but, you know, gosh, dang it, man. I feel... Every morning I wake up, I feel like I've gone 10 rounds with George Foreman. Just in my head feels all swole up. But, you know, I guess it gets everybody. And if anybody listening to this has got the same thing, I feel for you because this sucks.
If you hear Martin, what it sounds like, maybe chomping on ice, he's not having a whiskey drink. It's the cherry halt that he's chewing on.
Well, I don't know. A hot toddy may be pretty good. Get this thing. That's what my grandparents always do. I may all try that. Of course, Willie may frown upon it during work hours, but, you know, it'd be all right. Whew, Lord.
You know, I had Baptist. I've had Baptist ancestry as far back as I can remember, man. Honey and a touch of whiskey. That was the only time that a lot of my family members, like you're talking about, grandparents would ever touch alcohol. Honey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because then they'd have to sneak it. They'd have to sneak up to the liquor store to get it, you know, or get a grandkid or something like that to get it, because they didn't want nobody else to see them in there thinking they's up to no good, you know.
Well, Josh is not going to be with us this week, Martin. He is out hanging deer stands for extra Christmas money, which I don't blame him. There's a little sporting goods store there in Greenwood, Mississippi, which I think is a cool idea. And explain on the front end of the podcast that guy sells these deer stands, and he'll hang them for you. He'll put them up, these big house stands, instead of you having to get a special trailer and equipment to get it all up. The guy puts them up for you. It's a really good idea.
Oh, I think that when you were telling me about that before we got on here, I was like, now that's thinking there. And then I got to thinking, I wonder how much he'd charge for a lock-on, because my big butt don't like hanging on the side of the tree strapping them steps on, I'll be honest. Now, once it's in place, I'm all right, but it's that initial going up there before you got the lifeline on and everything else. I'm like, oh, you oak tree, please hold me. You know, I ain't as little as I once was. Of course, I ain't as big as I once was either, but, you know, I just, me and gravity, we tight. So anytime I get off the ground, I'm like, dad gummit.
Well, another really cool thing is the guy sells seed and food plot stuff, and he'll plant food plots at a discounted rate, come to your place. And to me, like I was telling you before this, to me, planting deer plots is one of the funnest things to do outside of planting my duck stuff. But deer plots, the thing about a deer plot when you're planting those, you're always in such a rush because you plant deer plots based on, I know we do here in the South, based on rain hitting the next day. So it is a wild rush.
Oh, yeah, it's a dust bowl. Yeah, boy, I'll tell you a good one. I remember we were planting a food plot or getting ready to, and we were fertilizing. And I was in college studying, you know, all my biology stuff, and we were spreading fertilizer, and it was going into some bushes. And anyway, some of that fertilizer apparently run this snake out onto the middle of the food plot. So me being the nerd I am, I stopped the tractor, jump off, and picked him up because I was like, man, that's awesome, because he looked like a hog-nosed snake. The only problem is he wasn't no hog-nosed snake. He was a pygmy rattlesnake, and I'm sitting there holding him. And by the time that I dissected that, I was like, I told my grandparents that were there, I said, give me one of them empty fertilizer bags real quick. And they were like, why? I said, just please get it real quick. And they got it, and I just dropped him in that bag because I didn't know, you know, I was afraid to, I didn't know what to do because I had him behind his head, and I just sitting there looking at him. He's crawling all over my hand. And it ended up being the first time one had ever been recorded in that parish in Louisiana. So unfortunately for him, he lost his life because they keep record of all that. Now he lives in the Museum of Natural History at LSU. But, you know, it was a pretty cool thing for me until I realized, boy, I could die right here. But, man, there's all sorts of stories like that, planting food plot. And you always seem to sometimes find you a dadgum yellow jacket nest, too. So that's always a good time. You know.
Always. That is 100% part of planting food plots.
Oh, yeah, we didn't have enough money to have no cab on our tractor. We got our tails tore up when that happened. I'm here to tell you.
I don't know what's worse, though. The yellow jackets or growing up on a farm, we always, after we got through laying by, we were either driving a high boy or baling hay. Now, one of the worst things about baling hay for us was in a cabless tractor in a old hay baler is that old hay baler, when you hit up a red fire ant bed, it would just throw it all up on you. You'd just kick it up in the cabless tractor and hit you know, just cover you with ants.
Then you got them little white heads pop up all over your body. Feel like you're 16 again and got acne all over your body. Golly. Ooh, shoot. Oh, man.
Hey, I got to ask you this before we get back in the story. Talking about deer hunting. Now, I don't know what's required of you, but, you know, with you being a part of the Realtree team, because that's a huge part of who y'all are. You get asked or it's required of you to go on the deer hunts that you do?
No, they asked me to, and I enjoy deer hunting. But you know, I like deer hunting in the places that we go because it's just so different than these thickets and all down here in Louisiana. I like going up there to them wide open spaces where I can see a long ways. Because it's just something that I don't ever get to do. And it's, you know, I mean, when you can see for 700 yards in any direction, then you see deer the whole time, and it doesn't get quite as boring as, you know, these things down here. They come to, if you got rice bran or corn out, they eat with their foot. They pick it up with their foot while they up there looking at your stand. And it's like, I don't like these deer. They too slick. I like them up there where I can just go sit and observe and watch deer be deer, you know. I remember my favorite one from up there was we were hunting, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago, and it was a bad drought, but there was one field up there that had a center pivot on it. So the alfalfa was really green, and that was about the only thing there was to eat up there. And them deer would get, they'd eat so much of that alfalfa, they'd come back by you, and their bellies just swole up like just, I mean, you could imagine bloating from eating nothing but green hay, and they'd be farting the whole time. Like, they're walking by, and they just, and man, me and my cameraman, we got so daggum tickled them things, because, I mean, sometimes they'd do like a human. They'd raise that back leg up to let it go. You know, it just, it was so daggum funny, man. It was, golly, I love that kind of stuff. It's those kind of stories that, that's what you go for. Forget the deer, you know, forget what you kill or anything like that. But I ain't ever heard a deer fart. And they just walked right by you sounding like one of them, one of them second lines down there in New Orleans after somebody gets married, you know, so.
Oh, that's pretty good. I, my goats, oh, which is another topic we will not get on, but my, my goats, they seem to snort. When they sneeze, they fart. They do it all at one time.
Oh, man.
All right, so I was watching, you know, the reruns for Duck Dynasty. I've seen them all, of course, but reruns for Duck Dynasty is on the Outdoor Channel. And I got to ask you this.
Uh-huh.
The one where Willie hires a new assistant was on the other night with the guy in the flip-flops. All right. As fake as that may be, I don't know if it's fake or not. It's probably real. But I saw that guy in one of your Instagram videos.
Oh, yeah.
A few weeks back.
John David. Johnny D. Oh, yeah. He's, boy, he's interesting. We call him the sloppy assistant is what we call him. He'll wear pants now, like, because it's wintertime. But if it's any moderate temperature, he's wearing basketball shorts and a long T-shirt and either flip-flops or tennis shoes. Like, you look at him, you're like, what would you do if you had to work somewhere that, you know, required any sort of dress code? Like, you know, and I always tell him, I say, you can't walk out there in a warehouse, son. You ain't got no closed-toed shoes on. We ain't trying to get no OSHA recordable around here. So, yeah, he's got a good look about him, though. He really
did he have the beard? He really kind of looks like Willie.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's actually, so in the deal, and it's, that's actually true, too. He's actually Corey's cousin. So, it's Corey's aunt's son. So, yeah, however that works. Cousins, first cousins, I get lost in all that family there. So daggum big. It'd take you a while to go through that family tree. But, they do favor a lot, and they have a lot of the same mannerisms and everything. So it's kind of like every day working with a junior Willie. So it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. But I'm glad I don't have his job. I had his job for a little while, and I'm glad I don't have it anymore. Ooh, keeping up with him and everything that he does and traveling and gone and, you know, all this, that, and the other. Oh, Lord. Ooh.
The best part of that episode is when he walks into the office with the flip-flops, but as equal to is when he called you and Godwin and JC in for some kind of meeting, and he has donuts there, and, you know, try to get him to blow a duck call.
Yeah. It ain't no secret. To get me and Godwin to do much, you just provide us with a little bit of groceries. We'll come wherever you want us to. We ain't... You want to have a meeting, all you got to do is say, we're having lunch. Okay, I'm in. He's actually turned into a pretty decent little duck hunter. I make fun of him because he's one of them that's got that build up on his duck call. It's a, and then he sounds fine, you know, but he's got that little kick start like Cy does. They got to take that gulp of air right before they get started. And I always make fun of him. I'm like, what? Why can't you just start from cat? But they got to get the I know everybody out here is hunting with somebody that does that. So it always makes me laugh. But, no, he's actually turned into a pretty sporty little duck hunter. Good shot. you know, and so, and I don't think he ever duck hunted before he worked here either. I think he was, you know, just kind of a, he played a lot of sports, but he never duck hunted or deer hunted or anything before he started working here. So, good. I mean, you know, that's one of the things I'm glad about, because add another person to the fold, you know.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw you a curveball today. Instead of talking so much directly about Duck Dynasty, I've got a, in an indirect way, I want to go about things today. Look, Duck Dynasty played a huge part in the growth of the company itself, Duck Commander.
Uh-huh.
I want to talk about that growth today, but also personally, in depth for you, being moved up to general manager of running Duck Commander. You know, the growth of Duck Commander, and then the story of you getting, you know, promoted into that position.
Okay.
I think everybody wants to know how that happened.
All right. Well, you know, you're right. For us, unlike a lot of other shows, reality style shows, you know, going back to where, excuse me, I'm going to probably do that several times, but, you know, a lot of the reality shows where it started, like, you know, Orange County Choppers and all that kind of stuff, they had like really cool widgets, but nobody could afford them. The general public couldn't afford them, where when we come along, everybody could buy a duck call. Like, you know, they're, some of them are $20 and on up to $150, $200, you know, just depending on materials and all that kind of stuff. So what it did for us is, on average, we sell about, I don't know, 100,000 a year. And then during the show, we were selling, you know, the most we ever sold in 1 year was like 1.1 million. So, I mean, you're talking about 1,000% growth, you know, over the long term. And, so,
wow.
So everybody that had them, yeah, and they're all built right here in West Monroe. So, we build them, we make them, everything is done right here. So it was really tempting during that time to kind of make some crappy product, because you knew that most of the time those people were never going to blow that duck call ever. They were going to take it and put it on their shelf and, you know, hope to run into somebody one day and get an autograph on it. That was kind of, you know, but, you know, the field, you know, was like, hey, if you won't put it on your lanyard, then don't put it in that box, and I don't care what we're doing, you know. And we were like, all right, whatever. You know, so we just kept on churning, and that's why we would get so backlogged on. I tell you, we were so backlogged at one time, like, we got in trouble from the credit card companies. Because, like, I mean, we were 90 days before we could fill an order. Like, but, you know, I mean, we were just what you saw on TV and trying to grow through that, and trying to add people and train people and do all this, that, and that. I mean, you know, like we've always said, you never want to do something and not be successful. But when something like that happens, you can't plan for that. You know, I mean, there was just, talk about come out of right field or left field, whatever field you want to come out of. But, like, I mean, we were, you know, it was unbelievable. And we still, you know, take a lot of pride in our duck calls. So, you know, we wanted to hand build them and do all that, and so we did, and would have to bring people in and teach them how to build them, and, you know, and but we made it through it. But boy, did it was, it was a struggle.
Hey, Martin,
I can assure you.
Pre-show employment versus post-show employment, number of people.
Pre-show was, what was it? It was probably, because I think of everything as the collective with Duck and Buck Commander, so it was probably 25 or 30 total. Now, that's with an accountant, bookkeeper, you know, sales guy, the people that you don't see on the show, kind of that keep your office running and all that, and shipping and receiving. So, because we had a couple of people that were there that, some of them you saw, but most of them you didn't. And then during the height of it, we probably had as many as 60, 65, I would bet.
Wow.
You know, just trying to, we had to really ramp up a customer service department to deal with what we were talking about being 90 days out. And, you know, and had to have people getting stuff made, you know, hats, shirts, all that kind of stuff. And now we're back down to about the pre-show level. The kind of the core crew has hung on, and you know, there's still a couple of new additions in here, but for the most part, we're back really close to where we were pre-show. And that's across the board, not just besides employment, but sales-wise and numbers-wise and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that was kind of the tough part when I became the general manager. I mean, you never, because we are, everybody here is like a family, even when we brought other people in. So you never like to have to let people, you know, go, but it's necessary for a business to sustain itself, you know. So that was always kind of a learning curve for me. So I was like, God, this sucks, you know, because we're a tight-knit bunch around here. So if you don't feel like family, you feel like really good friends. So you know how that goes. But in the height of it, you know, we had some, Willie brought in some guys from other companies in the industry that were super successful at what they did. And when they come in here and, you know, they were, it's just different no matter how big a small business grows, because it's still a small business, and coming from a major corporate environment, you know, you would think those skill sets are somewhat transferable, and they're not. You know, so if you've never dealt with a small business, and especially a small family business, it's just, you know, it's kind of hard to do. And at the end of the day, for a duck hunting company or for a duck call company, you, in my opinion, you have to be a duck hunter to know kind of what moves to make, and, you know what to do and what not to do, and what you can get away with and what you can't get away with, because the core audience of duck hunters isn't going to change much. I mean, you know, look at the trends. It's been a million for, you know, a little over a million duck hunters, duck stamps sold for, what, the past 5-6 years. So you know what you got to deal with. It's not like we have one that has a lot of ebbs and flows where it grows and then drops. It pretty well stays pretty steady. So if you don't have a person in charge that can kind of keep the finger on the pulse of that, then you can really get behind the eight ball on some things. So, you know, once Willie decided to keep it, you know, just keep downsizing a little bit, and then he asked me if I wanted to do it, and I was like, it scared me a little bit, because I knew, you know, like once you get to the top, then a lot of times, you know, you're the first one to go if things go south. So it's like, you become, you know, I mean, what you should be, because you're the leader of the thing. So, you know, just like baseball teams or anything else, football coaches, all that. I mean, when you struggle, then, you know, it's time to bring in a new regime. So, but it also gave me a great sense of pride that a family would entrust somebody not in their family to help, you know, run their company, guide it, direct it, and steer it towards a future. And, you know, I don't take that lightly at all. And it's, you know, the reason I wake up and come here with a smile on my face every day. And even though today it ain't much of a smile, it's kind of a frown with this crap I got in my head. But, you know, but I'm here, and we're going to figure it out and make sure everybody's getting their Christmas stuff. It's ordered, and, you know, make sure we get all of our orders shipped out. And so it's been really cool. You know, Jay said early on, and he didn't say it about Duck Dynasty or Duck Commander, but he said it actually about Tiger Woods. He said the fall is oftentimes as epic as the climb. And for us, from a business deal, that there was a lot of truth in that also. You know, as fast as we grew, when it decided to die, and I'm not saying die, but when it decided to not be at that rate, it was like you had a dead gum lead balloon tied on everybody's ankle. It just went straight down. So there was a big, you know, we went from a million, and then all of a sudden we dropped down to 250,000 duck calls sold. So we had a lot of duck calls sitting back there that were built and made and ready to go, but, you know, nobody was buying them anymore. So, you know, it's kind of an inventory nightmare when stuff like that happens. But it was, I always remembered that when he said that about Tiger Woods, and then I looked back at what we had, and I was like, God, he was spot on with that the fall is as epic as the climb. And I think that goes as for anybody or anything, any situation, you know.
Well, You know, and I, talking about Tiger Woods, the Tiger Woods effect, I'll say this. I've always said that Tiger Woods was good for the game, number one, because he brought attention to the game, but also the people around him he made better. If you look at the, man, there for 10 years when Tiger Woods was tearing it up, the level of competition did had not risen to where it is today. Tiger Woods made everybody else better. And if you take that into the Duck Commander perspective, you know, number one, y'all brought attention to duck hunting that wasn't there. It was only to a niche audience. You brought it to a level of people way outside the niche. And on top of that, you, in a sense, made people around you better.
Yeah, and I think what it's done is gave it, and especially in the duck hunting community, I mean, you look up and there's a lot of, you know, custom call companies now and people that bought them a lathe and are turning and trying to do all that. And I think, I mean, I think that's awesome because in a way, you know, they saw Phil chase the American dream and it fired some of them up to do the same. And, you know, I couldn't be happier for it, like for everybody, you know, so that's, but I had never thought about it under the terms of making everybody else, yeah, get better. And better is a loose term, but, I mean, I get what you're saying on that. That's yeah, I had never thought of it in those terms before.
Oh, man, just like Alabama in football. It's not.
Oh, God.
Eventually, and that's why the West just keeps getting tougher and tougher. Because, you know, everybody is trying to rise to that level. And eventually they will get there.
Yeah, well, and you see it. You know, even in professional bass fish. I mean, look at what Kevin Van Dam did. You know, I mean, he did the same thing where now it's like anybody any week on that deal can win. It used to be about five people were going to win. You know, there was you could pick one of five, and now it's like, you know, there's some old boy from West Monroe, Louisiana can win it next week. So it's pretty incredible when you stop and see what major things like that do. LeBron James, same way, you know, because basketball didn't have anything since Michael Jordan, really. And then LeBron come in and did the same thing, and now you've got, you know, the West there also that's incredible. So, and same deal with the Patriots and everything. So when you see these people get to that level, it does force the hands of people around them to either get better or to quit, you know. It's just one of those, it has that effect on it. And thank God, as a human race, we're pretty resilient, and most of them choose to get better, so.
Well, the thing about Duck Commander, I would say this if you weren't on the phone with me. The thing about it is I think that God has granted you success because of the faithfulness of the people that own and work for Duck Commander. And listen, if the business fails at the end of the day, I guarantee you there'll be a door wide open for any of y'all to go through that God's already got prepared for you.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt that you know, if you just look back at the history of the things that have happened to get us to where we're at, that the good Lord's hand has been on this thing since the start. And, you know, and I'm talking about way back in 1972. So, you know, that's one thing that we strive to do, and we, you know, continue to, you know, to push in our office is, you know, we – a lot of times we'll have a little Devo or something once a week, not so much during hunting season, but outside of hunting season we will. And, you know, we'll all get together as a company and have a little Devo and, you know, pray for everybody. And you know, we always generally end it with, you know, just help us make the decisions you'd have us make for the company. And, you know, I think if you, you know, if you honor God and everything that you do, then in turn he shines on you. And when, you know, you run into people all the time that, you know, they honor God, but they still run into a little bit of struggle. And I'm like, man, nobody said it was going to be easy just because, you know, that he's training you for something greater down the road. So just because a couple of doors get shut in front of you, that next one, walk through it and keep walking through it, you know, till it stays open for you. And, you know, because just because you believe, it doesn't make it easy. It gives you a peace that you know that no matter what happens, he's got you back. So, you know, which is the greatest sense of security you could ever have.
I want to ask you this. This will be the note that we close on. Success. Yes, what I'm saying to you is, in your view, when you let's say this. Let's put it like this. When you get to be 70 years old, and you look back through all the chapters of your life. No, this is not the last show we're doing with Martin. When you get to be 70, though, Martin, you're looking back on all this. How are you going to judge on your own life if you were successful or not?
You know, it's funny you ask this because it was probably a year ago or maybe a little longer that we were doing a Devo like, you know, I was talking about that we do here, but we were doing it outside of work at that time. And I was watching Sports Center or something, and one of them loudmouth ones, I don't remember who it was, but anyway, one of them got on there and called somebody a complete failure. And I'm like, huh, what? I mean, who are you to cast judgment that person is a complete failure based off of wins and losses and this, that, the other? So it got me to digging into the Bible, and what it led me to and something that I've tried to keep in my mind is, if you look through the Bible, and I don't have my little notebook with me, but so I'll paraphrase some of this, but if you look in the Bible, the only time that you see that anybody failed and that, you know, it seemed to be some disappointment is when they just absolutely gave up and quit trying. My deal on success is that's the only way you can actually fail, is to just say, forget it, I'm done, and go live your life mired in because somebody slammed a door in your face and, you know, that hurt your feelings or whatever. So to me, to be successful is the resiliency to get back up and get back in the fight, and, you know, whatever that fight may be. It could be a fight for your family, a fight for your marriage, a fight for your job, a fight for, you know, you name it. But you get up and you stay in that fight. And while you're in that fight, that you do everything that you can to keep those closest to you to know that they're the most important things in your life of this earth. You know, what does it mean? You know, the old saying of, you know, what good does it do to gain the whole world and lose your soul? So how do you do that? How do you gain the whole world, keeping your soul and keeping, you know, leading others to heaven? And ultimately, my deal is for success is if I have led one other person to heaven with me or because of me or because of something that I did, then everything else, who cares about money? You know, the old cliche, you can't take it with you. You can't. It's going to be left here for whatever. And in Matthew, it says somewhere, you know, about my riches aren't stored on this earth, but they're stored in heaven. And I think that's to me, the most successful is that I keep storing up those riches in heaven, that I keep doing the things that are going to get me to be with my grandparents again one day, to be with my parents once they pass on one day, to, you know, to spend eternity with the people that I love and with like-minded people. And I know for some people listening to this, you may not believe, and that's fine. And you may think, there go them Bible thumpers again. But, you know, that's your opinion, and I'm not going to blast you for it. And I just ask that you don't do the same to me. But ultimately, that the success to me is, where do you end up for eternity? Forget everything else, but where is your mind, body, and spirit for eternity? And if I can do that and make it there and bring other people with me, then I have been 100% successful in what I feel like I was put on this earth to do.
Why? I'm going to give you mine in just a minute. I want to ask you this question first. Where has our world come that if we're writing on the chalkboard, let's go back to high school days, elementary days, whatever you want to go back to, writing the word success on the chalkboard. Where did we turn? Because when I was young, I don't remember it being like this. Maybe I was just kind of country boy, naive to everything going on in the world. But if you wrote success on the board today, the equal to that would be money. That's
yeah,
what everybody's, yeah, everything is judged based on that. Where did I'm trying to go back through this, and I, like I said, maybe I'm naive, but I think in the past 20 years, that has really become the magnified point. Because I can remember my mom and dad's days, and maybe, like I said, maybe it was in my microscopic world that I lived in, that I can remember my mom and daddy saying that their success was looking at how I turned out later on in life. That was their success. What, you know,
yeah,
what I was carrying on for them in how they raised me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, back in those days, and even I think success for them was the legacy that they left behind. And for us, I mean, you know, especially in the hunting world, I think that's still what we strive for, is what do you leave behind? What kind of trail do you leave behind you? And that trail being your children, your, you know, whatever. So, but I think, you know, to your point, there's always been wealthy people in the world. I just think we're at a point now where,
and it's not
everybody
a bad thing.
See it, you know.
Listen, some of the most successful people in the Bible, in God's eyes, were wealthy. Don't get me wrong, Solomon.
Oh, yeah.
Good grief. I mean, there were tons of people that had lots of money. There's nothing, I'm by any means, everybody's listening, I'm not making wealth out to be an evil thing and sound like some kind of libertard here. I'm not. But let me ask you this. Do you think that success equals wealth came about because of the change of the morals of America?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's, I think it came from a shift of the focus in America. Morals would probably fall right in line with that. But where America used to be family-centered and family-oriented, you saw the shift to business-oriented. You know, you saw the shift to, and I think, you know, my generation, you know, early to mid-80s was really when you saw it a lot, where both parents were starting to have to work to keep up with the change of times and to provide for their families. And, you know, we're back in a little bit prior to that, you know, it was a stay-at-home mom who took care of the kids and, you know, made sure that, you know, they did their Bible, they did all this. And so I think when you saw the shift go from family first to, you know, whatever you want to call it, work first, business first, whatever, then you started seeing the shift in what does success mean? Because now you're no longer worried about your legacy. You're worried about what's in your bank account to turn around and provide for those kids or provide for whoever or provide for yourself or whatever. So, and with that, when you do that, when you take the focus off of that, then, I mean, I think your morals do change. You know, there becomes moral ambiguity and all sorts of things that fall in line with that. And ultimately, I think you get to where we are today. I also, with that being said, think that's one of the reasons that the show was so wildly successful, because we showed America that there still are people out there that are family first. And for the people that long for that and miss that and, you know, thought that they may have been on an island, that they were like that, they were showed that still happens and that it's okay. You know,
what was the largest age group watching your show? What was the top demographic?
It was 40 to 54 was the largest.
I knew that. I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's who it was. It was 40 to 54.
And it goes back to what you just said, that those people that grew up like that long for that, and they like seeing that on their TV.
Yeah, no doubt. And then, you know, so that was good, because those are, you know, in the minds of those people, what made it a success is those are part of the demo that they were, you know, it's 18 to 54, what they determine are the ones that are going to spend the money. So, you know, for buying products and stuff like that. So, you know, there's another way of how they deem success versus, you know, whatever. So, but yeah, 40 to 54 was the biggest we had, so.
All right, well, I'll end it with this, Martin. I'll say this, and I said this at my grandmother's funeral. The two ways that my grandmother determined success, I think it is a absolute 100% ultimate way to live. Number one, to see those life change through Christ by being saved, that is the ultimate legacy to leave behind. But the way that you judge success, and she's told me this many, many times as I laid on her couch and she sat telling me stories, she told me the one day that you'll be judged by your success is how many people show up at your funeral.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes to, you know, we spend so much time getting and doing for ourselves that at the end of the day, it's all about relationships with people. You know,
amen.
Man,
people loving on each other, man. That's awesome.
Let me just tell you this. For a 92-year-old woman, when she passed, to have 300 or 400 people show up at her funeral, that speaks volumes. Because most people, all right, you take their first-level friends, they've already passed at 92.
Yeah.
So that tells you right there what kind of legacy you're leaving behind as a 92-year-old person to have that many people show up at your funeral, how many people's lives you've touched.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So,
that's pretty stinking awesome.
If you live by that principle, if you live by, all right, you're in a competition to see how many people you can get at your funeral, that's an unbelievable principle to live by.
Couldn't agree more.
But I'm sorry I talked so much today. It's a great topic that we could probably go on and on forever, but we're about out of time. But Martin, man, thank you. Look, I think that outside of Duck Dynasty, Duck Hunt, and whatever, it's a lot of good stuff, life principles to talk about, and for you to get out to the Duck South listeners, the End of the Line podcast listeners. I think it's important.
Yeah, man, and I appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, I've said it, I think, before on here. I used to, you know, you'd have to pry it out of me to talk about Jesus and you know, being saved and this, that, the other. And now I can't not talk about it. So, you know, it's just a shift that goes on in your mind and your body and your spirit. And, man, I'm just glad the good Lord didn't burn me when he had the chance, you know. I'm thankful for second chances and forgiveness and grace. And, you know, hopefully I can show that to people all along the way.
I'm thankful for you coming on this little Potato Log podcast and, you know, speaking to the people that look up to you. Because I think it does this part of the world really good. And I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Well, thank y'all for having me. Yeah, you're right. We ain't done yet. We got a lot more stuff. We got a lot more smoke we can blow stuff about. It's all good.
All right, Mark.
Hopefully next time my voice will be a little better.
And Josh will be here with us. Maybe, you know, Josh has a lot better questions than I do. I'm kind of a airhead of the bunch. So, anyway. Martin, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.